This is CBS Eye on the World with Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang, and we welcome Scott Harold, senior political scientist, the RAND Corporation, to help us interpret diplomatic remarks over these last weeks about the defense of Taiwan. Scott, a very good evening to you. It is well known that Japan would come to the support of Taiwan in the event of a catastrophe, an attack in some fashion on Taiwan by the People's Republic of China. I believe it is generally true that the Biden administration has not said anything to contravene that and has spoken in some fashion in support of Japan's remarks. Is that accurate, and is this a significant turn in the road for Taiwan? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John and Gordon. And yes, I do think that we are at a point where there is increased attention in Tokyo, coordinated with Washington, on the importance of Taiwan's security for Japan's security and the U.S.-Japan alliance. Obviously, we had the joint statement during the Suga-Biden summit back in April that mentioned Taiwan explicitly. That has subsequently been repeated in the U.S.-ROK joint statement and at the G7. And you are right, John. There have been a number of important statements going back to late last year when Defense Minister Kishi Nobuo and his deputy Vice Minister Nakayama Yasuhide have both made remarks. In fact, Vice Minister Nakayama repeated his remarks and called on the world to, quote unquote, wake up to the threat posed by China to Taiwan, and remarks the Hudson Institute a few weeks ago. And Deputy Prime Minister Basso, who himself was previously prime minister and is an important figure in the Suga administration, has also recently made clear in remarks that were reported from a private fundraising event that it's his belief that a Chinese attack on Taiwan would rise to the level that it would so imperil Japan's security that Japan would legally and constitutionally be capable of helping respond to the defense of to defend Taiwan with its U.S. ally in the event of such a circumstance. And then, of course, you are correct that Indo-Pacific Security Coordinator Dr. Kurt Campbell has recently made remarks at the Asia Society that reinforce the notion that the United States and Japan and others, other allies around the world, are very concerned about and committed to the continued peace and stability in the Taiwan Strait.
Gordon, you have a question for Scott.
Scott, the next step for Japan would be to acquire even greater capabilities to not only defend itself, but to protect Taiwan. In an article you wrote in The Diplomat, you talk about how Japan should be looking to buy U.S. missiles. How is that going to be viewed in Beijing?
Well, Gordon, as you know we really cannot be couching all of our actions in terms of whether or not they please Beijing, and I know that's not your view, but it certainly is the reality that China will object if Japan acquires long-range precision strike capabilities, such as we talk about in the article. My colleague at Hosei University, my co-author, Dr. Mori Satoru, has spent some time looking at this, and there is a lot of churn in Japan right now over what sorts of capabilities would be necessary. The PLA's rapid modernization, its building up of a deep portfolio of advanced weapons platforms and systems, has in many people's minds potential to erode deterrence if the only concept we have of how to deter China is to deny China the ability to coerce us by hardening our bases and Japan's bases and building up missile defenses. The point that Professor Mori and I make in this article is that Japan has a robust debate ongoing about procuring capabilities that would enable it to punish China, to deter China by threatening to hold at risk Chinese targets, and that would potentially reinforce deterrence and make conflict less likely. Beijing will not like that. My colleague at RAND, Dr. Jeffrey Hornung, has pointed out, as does Professor Mori in a separate article that I'm working with him on, that any acquisition by Japan of long-range precision strike capabilities will have important implications for the U.S.-Japan alliance that will necessitate much deeper planning, coordination, and possibly moving to additional command and control relationships that would blend the forces in such a way as to ensure that they are working more seamlessly, which has been a goal since 2015 of the two sides.
Strong language is extremely helpful in contests that are said to be practical. I'm looking at 20th century history. Strong language from one power directed at an adversary tends to change the direction of that adversary. Have you seen any evidence in your understanding of the PRC that after the statements by Japan supported by the Biden administration, Beijing has changed its direction, these constant threats, all of this implication that they're coming? Has that abated in some fashion, Scott?
Well, John, I think what I would say is, first of all, China has been building capabilities, but to say that they are coming, I don't know that, it wasn't as if they were sailing to invade Taiwan yet. So what I think the Japanese have shown quite clearly in tandem with the United States, and so too have many, many other countries in the Indo-Pacific, is that when you are strong and firm with Beijing, but not escalatory, not engaging in a war of words, certainly not calling Xi Jinping your friend and saying I trust him and he's beloved of the Chinese people, but also not particularly protesting provoking with, personalized language, but simply saying we value the peace and stability of the Taiwan Strait and it is a national security interest of the United States, Japan, and others that we will stand up and protect. That has tended to work to move Beijing off of any possible trajectory it may be contemplating. And we've seen numerous countries refuse to bend under Chinese pressure, countries from South Korea to Japan to the Philippines, even smaller countries or weaker countries that have not bent. And that firmness, I think, is something that all of us should take heart from and should recognize is an important characteristic of standing up to Chinese pressure.
Gordon, you have a question for Scott.
Scott, you've been talking about Japan taking a broader view of its defense to include Taiwan. What are Japan's relationships with India, for instance, another member of the Quad, or Vietnam? It seems to me that Japan is also extending its views to include them in their defense calculations.
Oh, you're absolutely right, Gordon. The relations between Tokyo and Delhi, in particular under the Abe Shinzo administration, were extremely warm, cordial, and growing much stronger. The two sides have been negotiating for some time over the possible export of a pontoon boat aircraft that can kind of take off and land on water. They've been negotiating some other defense agreements. I think that that's likely to continue, although, of course, it has been substantially interrupted by the COVID-19 pandemic. And with Vietnam, there is a recognition on the part of Japan that they want to support Vietnam's legitimate maritime law enforcement activities. And so they've transferred a number of coastal patrol craft to Vietnam. They've done some training with the Vietnamese to try to help them enhance their maritime domain awareness. Japan's overall proactive contributions to peace, which is the specific framework that the Abe administration used, has been maintained and will be continued under the Suga administration and looks to basically reinforce the liberal international order in the Indo-Pacific with allies and partners against the prospect of Chinese coercion.
Scott, a detail here. I believe I am behind the times in the ministers who have spoken out about the defense of Taiwan. Can you help me, please?
Certainly, John. I think what we're talking about here most recently has been Defense Minister Kishi Nobuo, who previously served as State Minister of Foreign Affairs, the number two in the foreign ministry, has now taken on the portfolio since late last year of Defense Minister, and he has been one of the most active figures in the Japanese government speaking up about the importance of Taiwan's security, together with his deputy Nakayama Yasuhide, another Diet member who is currently serving as a political appointee in the defense ministry.
And these are strong, these are understood as strong voices in Tokyo. Is that correct, Scott?
These are senior Diet members in the ruling Liberal Democratic Party. Defense Minister Kishi is the brother of former Prime Minister Abe Shinzo, is a widely regarded as a potential future prime minister himself, certainly an important voice and one who is very strongly committed to ensuring that Taiwan that Japan has Taiwan's back. In fact, back when then candidate Tsai Ing-wen, now President Tsai Ing-wen, was running for office the first time in 2016 that she won, he welcomed her to Tokyo before she took office and, in fact, arranged a meeting, it's widely reported, with his brother, then Prime Minister, a casual meeting. So this is someone who has a long history of commitment to this issue. He's not a Johnny-come-lately in any sense. He is really bringing a lot of expertise and carries a lot of weight in the Japanese political system.
Scott Harold is a senior political scientist at the RAND Corporation. Gordon Chang, at Gordon G. Chang, Gatestone, Newsweek, and The Hill. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.